Welcome, everyone. This is Mia Ferroletto, publisher of New Observations magazine. Welcome to the New Observations podcast. I am delighted to be back in the interviewer seat after probably 6 weeks of dealing with some health issues, as a matter of fact, but everything's well, and organizing the upcoming conference July 23rd through the 27th in South Dakota. And in addition, publishing the New Observations issue on Pine Ridge, which is about to be released in just a couple of weeks. If any members of the audience would like to receive the PDF version of the Pine Ridge issue, please send me an email at mia.ferroletto@gmail.com, and I'd be delighted to send you a copy of it. It will also be available on the New Observations website, which is www.newobservations.org. It's an extraordinary issue with, I just can't express my gratitude and appreciation for the contributors to the magazine. We are covering life on Pine Ridge from the 1970s during the time of the Wounded Knee Siege up to Standing Rock in North Dakota, and current days with the coronavirus on Pine Ridge. And we are featuring the art of Leonard Peltier. We have 26 of Leonard's paintings that are being reproduced in the issue. And John Fusco, who wrote the screenplay for the film Thunderheart and produced, is a co-producer for the movie, Michael Apted film from 1992, wrote an incredible article for us. Chase Iron Eyes, one of the leaders of Standing Rock, contributed an article. And our next guest not only contributed an article to the Pine Ridge issue, but she was also a speaker at our conference this past July on Pine Ridge, which Whitley has spoken of and written about extensively in his new book, A New World. Please welcome Cindy Katches to the show. Hello, Cindy. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, Mia. It's really an honor to be here. Thank you.
Oh, it's my pleasure. It's such a gift for us to have you share your current life on the Pine Ridge Reservation and the extraordinary, truly extraordinary and magical love story of how you got there almost 30 years ago, and what life is like now. You have just an amazing legacy, which we'd like to hear about. How did you meet your husband, Peter Katches? And tell us about Peter.
Well, I had known about his father. Pete Katches was a 37th generation Lakota medicine man, and he is beloved in Indian country for bringing the Sundance back out into the open in the early 1960s, while it was still against the law, into 1978. It had to go, the Sundance never ended. It had to go underground. But Pete had the courage to bring it out. I had a Lakota elder, Patricia Locke, who's pretty renowned in Lakota country too, from Standing Rock Reservation. She said if we had a pope in Indian country, it would be Pete Katches, because he had brought back to their people the Buffalo Sundance, which was Sitting Bull Sundance. They had lost everything. So I had known about Pete for a long time. I met him at a, I had brought together Native Americans to meet with the King people because of human rights issues for Native people. And so I truly felt he was a true holy man. And I came out to Pine Ridge because he had had a stroke, and I knew if I didn't come out, I felt that he would pass away. And on the third night, he told me something was going to happen to me, and he woke me up at 3 in the morning. He was hemorrhaging, and he sent me after his son. And because he knew his son would take care of him, he truly believed that a medicine man only can truly be helped by another medicine man. So that's my husband saw me, and he said he went home and cried because he didn't think he had to marry a white woman.
It takes a lot of strength for a Lakota man to marry a white woman. I know that's true.
he said he recognized my soul, but it was we had to be matched, both of us, to marry one another. But he asked me to marry him on the second time I saw him. So
we
were obedient to our destiny.
Yeah. Well, when fate is looking you in the eye and standing in front of you, it's hard to turn away.
It is. I mean, I tried, but and he did too.
So, what was life like for you on Pine Ridge? It must have been culture shock in many ways back in the early 90s.
You know, I went from living, I had my own company in Florida, Jupiter, Florida, which is one of the wealthiest communities in the country, but creating outdoor landscaping for very wealthy people, to the poorest place in the United States. It was like, my husband and his father had to go to a spiritual gathering that they were both invited to in another state. And he had to just drop me off and get people to help me to move in. So it was like tremendously good. You know, I went from, we built a cabin and we lived without electricity or water, which was common to him, but needless to say, different for me, for close to 8 or 9 years.
Wow.
Which is pretty common here on the reservation. And I had done projects in different parts of the world creating beautiful environments. So I had a portfolio and social and economic development projects. I had a portfolio. I thought I could get a job anywhere. And I came to Pine Ridge, and I couldn't get work. Any work.
In the surrounding areas, in the Rapid City area?
You know, I didn't even consider driving to Rapid City. Is an hour and a half. At that time, it was 2 hours away. I felt like I needed to live the life of the people here before I truly understood and be able to truly give back what life had taught me. So I lived that life. And my husband and I, you know, trying to figure out let me give you a little history. My husband's father, Pete, was raised in the residential school, and he was a very spiritual man, but was taught by the Jesuits, the residential school, that being a medicine man was a disciple of the devil, or a witch doctor. So he did not want to be a medicine man. And he had a vision of him being a lone sun dancer. And he worked for the church. And he ran away from that vision for 17 years until he knew that unless he enacted it and be done with it, he was going to die. but he did not want to be a medicine man. But he should share. He did. He finally built that arbor the way he thought, and did the Sundance. And he said, he told me, he said, I didn't understand why I would be crying all day long dancing. And he said, I was at the height of my manhood. Why, even though he was pierced, why would he be crying? And he said, when they went to get the tree and it fell on his leg, it broke it. And so he danced, being the man he was, all day long on that broken leg. And that
amazing.
Was crying. But when he broke free at the end of the day, his leg was healed. And he said, and power came to him. And he said that when you manifest the spiritual world, that spiritual vision that we each have inside of ourselves, and manifest it in the physical realm, with that, when you bring those two worlds together, comes power. And I think that's truly that way for each of us.
Oh, I agree. I agree. In Lakota culture, though, it's so readily available. The people that I've met and come to know have instant access to their intuitive gifts and energetic gifts as well. Can you speak about that?
Yes, it's generations of a society that was a successful civilization. It was a powerful civilization because they understood that their destiny was to be noble, that man's nobility was their destiny. So that is what they valued, that's what they strove for. So being, walking towards their creator as they understood him was the most important thing in their lives. And so it's in their DNA. They, you know, when we sacrifice and we really truly strive to be the noble person we were created to be, each one of us, those sacrifices that we have to make in this worldly materialistic society isn't valued. But yet those sacrifices come as gifts, and those gifts are born upon the people of future generations. And they understood that the future generations, it was all about what sacrifices they could make for the generation that came after them. And I think Pete and Peter lived their lives doing that. You know, my husband brought back the Sundance, you know, helped not only his father at Standing Rock, he did the ninth year to teach them. And he was the first person to pierce, to show them the power of that. But Cheyenne River, Rosebud, Lower Brew Reservations, he brought the Spotted Eagle Sundance back to them. He put on the Spotted Eagle Sundance. He started it when he was 19 here on Pine Ridge. He did it for 44 consecutive years. So
wow.
Not only did he do that, but he did a total of 56 Sundances that he ran. I don't know of any man in history that has done that.
That's extraordinary. What a gift to all of us. Because when the Lakota dance, they're not just dancing for themselves, they're dancing for the world.
Peter said that, it's even beyond that. Peter said that Arbor is the universe.
Right.
So this prayer is not only for every living thing on creation in our world, but our universe. So it's a powerful, if it's done right, it's an incredibly powerful prayer. And it's all about sacrifice.
It certainly is. It's 4 days of no drinking, even water, fasting, constant prayer, aside from being tethered to the tree in the center of the Sundance area.
Yes, it's a beautiful prayer, and it has so many symbolic meanings that really is about anyone's spiritual journey. I came here as I thought a mature, Baha'i. I had, when I was 5 or 6 years old, I had a Native American spirit that would talk to me about my life and how to be as a human being. And I remember one time I was building a little house out of moss in the woods, and he said, "Someday you're going to marry somebody very special." And I asked him how I would find him, and he said, I never forgot what he said. He said, "You'll find him when you follow the laws of God." And that was very powerful for me, because I was raised loving Jesus, because I was raised in a typical, wonderful, powerful Christian home. But I knew that God was for all of humanity, that if someone living on another part of the world, whether it be in the deep jungles of South America or in China where they practice Buddhism, that if they didn't recognize Christ, that they would not go to hell, that my God was bigger than that. And so I went on a journey and found that who I was a Baha'i. And coming here, helping my husband, because Baha'i is about the oneness of God, the oneness of religion, the oneness of humanity, that helping my husband, an incredible amount of healing that the miracles that I've witnessed are phenomenal, of healing, helping people on their spiritual path that have the Lakota way, and helping them with the Sundance. I truly internalize and really experience the oneness that Baha'u'llah is trying to help the world understand, that humanity is the cells of one body. And the globe is, we're going, the earth and humanity is going through those growing pains to help us understand our oneness. Peter and the Lakota have always understood this oneness. They have the end of their prayer, they'll say, "Matakwi Oyasin," meaning all my relatives, all my relations, and that they're acknowledging the relationship not only with humanity, but with all of God's creation, the winged and the four animals and the star people and all of humanity. They're that constant reminder that we're all connected. And basically that is, go ahead.
Beautifully said, and I just want to raise the distinction here, that this is so much in keeping with the teachings of Jesus. Jesus did not create Christianity.
Absolutely. Jesus gave us the path towards peace.
Yes.
Buddha did too, and Pete said if you could translate Lakota into English, the best way he could translate is the people of peace.
Right.
The spiritual journey is the journey towards peace. It's an internal, and when we truly manifest that inside of ourselves, if we truly live the teachings of Jesus, then we will have absolute peace.
And all religious true religion, not, I hate to use the word religion because it implies organized religion, but all of the teachings of advanced souls duplicates that message.
Absolutely. And Baha'u'llah says a true Christian is a true Jew, is a true Muslim, is a true Baha'i.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, because, but he said that what happens is that religion has to be renewed. It's not, it's, you know, so that it comes about, it, if you look at the history of religion, religion changes humanity about, comes to humanity about every 1,000 years. A great teacher will come. And it's unity. You know, Moses was the unity of the tribal. All the Native American religion was tribal unity. You know, Muhammad's revelation was the first great nation building. Most Christians don't realize that the Muslims created the first universities and mathematics, you know, all the contributions that the Muslim revelation brought to the world. It's really one religion unfolding with that aspect of unity growing. God is about unity. He's about color. We don't want everyone to be the same. It's our uniqueness, our differences that is so beautiful in the world.
Absolutely. We're going to take our first commercial break and be right back with Cindy Ketches.
All of my summer conferences have been canceled except one, Consciousness and Contact, the last weekend in July on the Pine Ridge Lakota Sioux Reservation in South Dakota, the site of the extraordinary experience I had last summer that I describe in A New World of Seeing into a Parallel Universe. We'll be back. We're going to do a CE5 experiment at the Devil's Tower. That's attempting to call and get into contact with the visitors as a group. Linda Moulton Howe is going to be there. Barbara Lamb, and many others. It's going to, without question, be an extraordinary conference. But there's a kicker. The kicker is there are only 35 guests. We have 10 speakers and 35 attendees. That is it. So if you want to go, go to unknowncountry.com right now and click on the Consciousness and Contact ad or email mia.farolato@gmail.com. That's Mia, M-I-A, dot Farolato, F-E-R-O-L-E-T-O, @gmail.com to find out more.
Owls are somehow connected to UFOs. I don't say that lightly. After over a decade of obsessive investigation, I am convinced of this connection. As strange as it may seem, people are seeing owls in the highly charged moments of a UFO sighting, and within the challenging memories of UFO abduction. This mystery has been the focus of my research. My name is Mike Cleland, and I have explored these connections in my book, The Messengers. At its core, this book is simply a collection of stories, and each is a remarkable real-life experience. The Messengers is also my own story of how owls played a role in my life. It's an exploration into the deeply personal questions that arose from my own contact experiences. The Messengers is the first in a trilogy of books, and each volume explores a deeper aspect of the UFO mystery. All my books are available on Amazon in paperback, ebook, and very soon as audiobooks.
The new Unknown Country is becoming a social hotspot for people interested in UFOs, ETs, the contact phenomenon, and so much more. Becoming a site user is free and enables you to participate in our active free message boards. And if you join as a paid subscriber, you'll also gain access to our weekly subscriber chats and video meetings, plus access to our podcast archives, meditations, video section, and so much more. So join free or subscribe. Either way, unknowncountry.com belongs in your life.
Welcome back to the show. So,
Thank you, Cindy.
Tell us about what it was like for you helping Peter and Pete organize the Sundances, and share with us the fact that you're continuing the Sundance ceremonies on your property with the passing of Pete, your husband Peter. You're continuing the tradition.
You know, Pete and Peter, when Pete said, a true medicine man's vision is to heal the people. And that come to him. That's not just the Lakota people. It's all the people that come, that are, their spirits are drawn to them. And so he felt in order to heal the Lakota people, the first step would be bringing them back to who they were as Lakota, because everything was stripped from them through the residential schools. Their language, their parenting skills, everything. That 2 to 3 generations in residential schools devastated the Lakota people. They were only allowed to come home for two months in the summer to be with their parents, even though their parents only lived a mile away. So everything, they spoke Lakota, it was the only language they spoke. That everything that was called Lakota, they were said, were lesser than, that it was from the devil. So this devastated the people. So Pete felt to help bring them back by bringing back the sun dances, by bringing back the cultural teachings of who they are. Pete and Peter spent their life doing that for their people. And they realized in the late 80s they needed to create a nonprofit, and they named that nonprofit Ocheti Wakan, which means sacred fireplace. And I know that the fire that Pete was talking about was that inner fire that is within each one of us. As in Peter's and my life together, we started slowly working, bringing the language back into the schools, because both Pete and Peter felt if you lose a language, and at that point when we first, I surveyed all 9 districts on Pine Ridge, and at that time we had only 2% from 0 to 17 years that could speak the language. And we had over 50% of 50 and over that spoke the language. It was their first language. So we had a unique situation. So we dedicated the first years of our life really trying to get, we developed a curriculum for Pine Ridge Schools and another program that to get the language in the schools. And it looks like most of the schools are going by Lakota Language Consortium, which is doing a really good job with immersion and stuff. So we've come a long way with that. And then one of the things that interested me was addiction, because addiction is extremely high on Pine Ridge. And but it's high. We have the highest mortality rate in the country. Our life expectancy is only 42 to 47 years old, depending on the year. We have the lowest life expectancy in the Western Hemisphere, second only to Haiti. So, and we have over 80% unemployment. So it's really a devastation here. So addiction was, we had the same amount of people graduating from high school when Indian education started in South Dakota in 1935. Less than 30% graduated even now today. That number has never changed. And that's because of the trauma. That's because the trauma has never been healed. So I read a book by a Baha'i man called In Search of Nirvana. And basically he said that we have to put our resources in prevention. And it has to come from a spiritual place. We've tried mental education, but the only successful treatment for anybody that is addicted has to have a spiritual approach. So it only made sense that prevention had to have a spiritual approach. So we did a couple books called Learning Prevention Using Lakota Values in the early 2000s. My husband was an alcoholic, and I would really question him on this because he was probably one of the most powerful spiritual people I've ever met. And he said, "Why would you think I would not have the disease of my people?" And in doing, you know, and yet he was against alcoholism and drugs, and you know, so it was really an interesting journey for me personally because I had such an aversion against alcoholism and drug addiction and all this. But it was a good journey for me because it truly is a disease. And so we got to a place in our community where we were having a suicide crisis with our children, with over 500 kids a year trying to commit suicide on our reservation alone. And my husband's health was very serious, and he knew he wasn't to be in this world a lot longer. And he was praying and praying. He even brought back an old song. He was invited to be a guest, to be on a panel at the National Institutes of Health. And he said the reason that when they got to Peter, he said, "The reason I'm Peter Katchers, and the reason I'm here is our kids are killing themselves and I'm looking for answers." Of course, that wasn't why he was invited. But the fortunate part was that the Surgeon General was the moderator. And he came to Peter and he said, "We've been trying to figure out how to make people healthy for over 60 years. And he said, "Bottom line, what we found out is the best money spent is in prevention." So what we did is we came home and we talked about that Sundance, because that Sundance, the numbers 4 and 7 are very sacred to the Lakota. So that Sundance really is a medicine wheel. And I sat down with my husband and I said, as a human being, in order to be healthy, we have all the things that we need to do for our physical body. We have all the things that we need to do to heal emotionally, to heal the past and the trauma that we've experienced in our lives, how to have healthy relationships. We have to do all these things to have a healthy spiritual body. And we have a lot that we have to do in order to develop our mind. So in essence, we have 4 bodies. I said, if we took that medicine wheel up there, and what body would represent the physical body? We went through it and he told me. So we had that vehicle to create a curriculum from, we felt, 2nd grade to 8th grade. The reason we did this is because our children by 2nd grade, 7 years old, our kids and all children, really, if they're in an addictive environment, will start manifesting the behavior of addiction. And so we knew we needed to start then, while they still had that innocence and the hope that they could do it differently than their parents. They didn't have the knowledge to do it different, but they had the hope. and the purity of heart. So we created a 7 years of curriculum based in Lakota culture. That is, we collected over 300 ancestor stories to bring into our curriculum and our teacher's manuals. And we created a parent's handbook to teach the parent what we're sharing with the children to get us all on board. That's the vision of Ocheteuacan. We have that continuing in the future. I believe all the sun dances that Peter and Pete helped start are still continuing. And we've seen two generations of children growing up in the Sundance, and they're doing amazing things. They're our leaders in our
community. That's fantastic.
Today. So that's kind of where we're at right now.
Well, we're going to take our second and final break now and be right back.
All of my summer conferences have been canceled except one, Consciousness and Contact, the last weekend in July on the Pine Ridge Lakota Sioux Reservation in South Dakota, the site of the extraordinary experience I had last summer that I describe in A New World of Seeing into a Parallel Universe. We'll be back. We're going to do a CE5 experiment at the Devil's Tower. That's attempting to call and get into contact with the visitors as a group. Linda Moulton Howe is going to be there, Barbara Lamb, and many others. It's going to, without question, be an extraordinary conference. But there's a kicker. The kicker is there are only 35 guests. We have 10 speakers and 35 attendees. That is it. So if you want to go, go to unknowncountry.com right now and click on the Consciousness and Contact ad or email mia.feroleto@gmail.com. That's Mia, M-I-A, dot Feroleto, F-E-R-O-L-E-T-O, @gmail.com to find out more.
In 2015, Whitley Strieber entered a whole new level of contact. And his new book, A New World, tells the powerful and revealing story of what's been happening. Read about contact experiences unlike you have ever heard described before. Learn about the breakthroughs in communication that are developing right now. Experience the wonder of seeing into a mirror universe. The thrill of discovering the close encounter experience in an entirely new way. And learn the secret of how Whitley has built a very real and ongoing relationship with our otherworldly visitors. One Amazon reviewer says, a significant document of human empowerment. Another, one mind-bending, reality-shifting read. Another, outstanding. Get A New World today, available as a paperback, a hardcover, and an ebook wherever books are sold. And as an audiobook read by Whitley on Audible.com.
Welcome back to the show. Cindy, it's so fascinating hearing you talk about your curriculum, because it's really around the age of 6 or 7 that a child begins to shut down their own spiritual centers unless that's supported and encouraged. Their intuitive abilities, which are natural as an infant, become diluted in a sense, and their pineal gland can begin to close at that time based on the stimulus and input and support that they're given by the people around them. And clearly in Lakota culture, you are recognizing that and changing that trajectory.
Yes, it's, ideally our prevention should start prior to getting pregnant, but you're absolutely right. That child has to have spiritual guidance starting then. And and the encouragement to believe in themselves, the encouragement to trust that inner voice, that will lead them to the spirit, to be a seeker of truth, that will lead them to the spiritual path that they were destined by, they were destined to find.
There's something that you and I have talked about together that I'd like to bring up because I think it's so important for children and for adults, and that is the different types of medicine men and the different types of spirituality and discernment, because a little bit of knowledge can go a long way towards confusion. And the practice of walking the path with discernment, with spiritual discernment, is such an important topic. And I'd love to hear your take on that and any words of wisdom you have for all of us.
You know, my husband said that he was the last of his type of medicine man. He said that time, that a cycle ended with him. There are many people that can be considered a medicine man or a medicine woman because of their desire to be of service to help another person to heal. There are certain spiritual truths that give us power. And I'm afraid that a lot of people, not a lot, but there's always a segment of people that have that little bit of knowledge and they use it to manipulate people to get their own desires met. You find this for medicine men, so-called medicine men, my father-in-law would call them. You find it in the church. I think you find it at probably any place that you're seeking to, spirituality to some degree. The Baha'i faith is designed such that it makes it really hard to manifest that because everyone, there's no leader. So you're encouraged to independently investigate truth for yourself, and that journey is an individual journey. But religion has a purpose because if it's a true religion, a new civilization is manifested better than the past civilization. That's the power of religion. You look at Christian civilization, where man was prior to Christ. You look at the Muslim civilization, where the Muslim world was prior to Muhammad. So, and it even happens, I see it in Indian country. You know, my husband was a spotted eagle medicine man. Every type of different clans, whether you're a bear medicine man, have a different way of looking at the sacred teachings at that time. So I guess I would say to people, if we have to trust our inner voice, that's something that each one of us has. And if something doesn't feel right, and you're feeling maybe that you're being manipulated, you really need to look at that, because you can truly get spiritually hurt, and to the point that you might not survive. I've seen it. I've learned it myself. So that's important, I think.
It sure is. And once on the path, once consciously on the path, we need to take responsibility for our thoughts and our actions and our words, because the intensity and the power of those things intensifies when we walk the path, and what we send out, even in a moment, even in a weak moment, can have very big consequences if left unchecked.
That is so true, Mia. We as spiritual beings are responsible for our thoughts. So if we buy into negativity, to the news, to and they're talking about war, we need to have a greater thought, Baha'u'llah says, of peace. Our thoughts are powerful. Our prayers are powerful. So that in this time of struggling for justice, we have to be careful that we don't become at war and continue the cycle again. War is obsolete. It's a time of peace. So how do we have social justice and still be a warrior of peace? That's the challenge I think we have today, right now, so that we don't continue the cycle. How many times, because of injustices, have we gone to war and we end up becoming the perpetrators?
Well, I've had several conversations this week with listeners to this show and Whitley and Mike's programs on Unknown Country, and people have asked me what my advice is, what they need to do, or just a recommendation in terms of how to proceed. And my answer has been consistently the same. The most important lesson that I have learned on this path, which, you know, I've really been on my whole life, is to just tell the truth, to acknowledge your real feelings about any given situation, and not lie to yourself, not be ambivalent, and to express that truth, because when you're being honest about any given situation, the person has the opportunity to be honest back to you.
Absolutely. And the truthfulness is the foundation of all human virtues. I mean, it's the foundation. it's what we have trust, what builds trust. And the other thing I would say is to do it with love. Because a heart full of fear cannot be possessed by love. So we have a choice. Do we want our heart to be fearful, or do we want our heart full of love? And if we tell our truth with love, it will bring us to peace. I really believe that, Mia. You're absolutely right.
Well, just to tell it without judgment, you know? I mean, I think love can come in stages because, you know, we're learning about universal love, but to just not attack, you know, to just state your truth. And what happens when you're doing that is your entire internal alignment becomes clean and sparkly and straight, so that the information that's coming in from the universe and from everyone else can be heard and not distorted. Transmitting out.
And it's magic, especially it's what life is about. It's the sparkle, it's the light. And if you can do it without judgment, because each one of us has a path, and we don't know what transpired in that path. As the Indians say, we didn't walk in their moccasins. And so we really don't have the capability of judgment. So that's a huge thing, Mia, that you're absolutely right. That's powerful.
Well, when you talk about Peter's experience with alcohol and the fact that he was such a powerful healer, the truth is he took it in. He was doing an alchemical healing for the collective. And he suffered tremendously doing that. It was not an easy path.
He did. I I remember my sister met this medicine man down in Southwestern. And she told him that she was his sister-in-law. And he said, oh, he said, it was awful what happened to Peter. And she said, what do you mean, is alcohol? And she said, no. He said, I was at a gathering close to the Canada that he was there. All these medicine men were called together there. And he said there was a medicine man there that was very powerful, and he was doing such, but he worked for the dark side. And he said Peter took him on, and he swallowed and diffused all that medicine man's power. Mm-hmm. He said, I don't know anyone would have done that. He said, I'd be drunk too. So we can't judge. We have, and that was part of his job, was to take things that were dark and get rid of them. Because light is the power. Absolutely. But a lot of people judge him.
And facing the dark, that's the thing too, we can't sweep these things under the carpet. We have to look at them, own them, and transmute them.
Absolutely.
Accept them and transmute them.
Right. Dark is what teaches us. I mean, if it wasn't for the dark, how would we go for the light, so to speak? Because the dark hurts. It's not a good place to be. It hurts us. It destroys everything that's good inside of us. So it's the vehicle to send us to the Creator, to the light, and to become an instrument of the light, I think,
Absolutely.
But it's kind of an imbalanced right now. So we really have to truly focus on our thoughts. And the universe is there to help us. There's so many angels and spirits. I asked Peter who he worked with, and the eagles, and he said, the best way I can explain them, he said, they're angels that have never been on earth. And as we raise our consciousness, we get to communicate with them, and they're there to help and assist us, because any true spiritual being, whether they're in earth or around the earth, are there to serve humanity, to serve others, other life forms. We're there to help with life, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Divine intervention from all forms, from all realms, is a constant if we avail ourselves of it. It's always there. It's always
right.
There to help.
It's always there, and the Lakota understand that being of service is the highest thing that they can do, and as Baha'is too. I mean, I think any spiritual person, in our curriculum, we're constantly bringing back, how can we be of service? What can we sacrifice for the generations that come after us to have a better life?
Yeah, especially now, especially as we look around after 3 months of being sequestered and see the life force and the vibrancy in the air and the trees and the plants and the animals. It's just extraordinary what has been shown to all of us. It's undeniable now.
My husband asked the spirits, he said, what is the most evil thing in the world that I have to deal with? And he said, greed.
Mm-hmm.
They said greed. And so this materialism, racism, all of that is a spiritual disease. And the basis probably is from fear, because we're valued on those things. So we have to destroy it. This pandemic is giving us an opportunity to realize that we can live probably better without oil if we put our resources into green. We have the technology, that hemp industry can create everything that plastic can create. We can get off our addiction to petroleum. So it's giving us a time to understand the value of our relationships, that life is about relationships, and not being able to go up to someone and hugging them is giving us something to think about. So a friend of mine said, and I think it's so true, he said, God is giving us a timeout. You know, when children misbehave.
Right.
You have to say, okay.
And a very gentle one, too, in many ways. It could be way worse.
It could be, and it could be if we don't change.
Yeah.
That you know, a lot of people are thinking, well, we'll go back to how we were. That's not going to happen. If it does, we're going to get slammed harder. We have to change, and everyone thinks that we have to change those around us, but in reality, we have to change ourselves. And in changing ourselves, the change will happen.
That is so true. That is absolutely true.
Yeah.
So you've married your Baha'i faith with your Lakota faith.
Yeah.
In more ways than one.
It is all one. And isn't it wonderful? God, you know, God is about peace. God is about love, you know. So so this incredible journey we're on, is, yes, it's a marriage. And I feel I've been blessed. I mean, it was only by going my spiritual journey would I have ever met Peter, would I have ever created what we created together. We were able to do so much more because we were together. And so I really encourage everyone out there to follow their heart, to follow that spiritual path that's you're burning inside to investigate.
Go ahead. Sorry.
I just wanted to say, you know, I wanted to talk about our curriculum for those who are out there that might like to
please
help
do
in some way.
Yes.
We have a lot of Lakota County schools are going to be using our curriculum from kindergarten to eighth grade. They're going to start with our ancestor stories in kindergarten, but they can't afford to buy the actual curriculum for them. They're only doing the teachers, and they're giving the teachers and counselors our curriculum. But I'm trying to raise funds to buy workbooks for all the kids because they need these workbooks to be able to go back when someone's bullying them or to remind them that they're a sacred being and all this different stuff that our book encourages them to remember. So, I just wanted to share that.
Wow. How much do you need to raise to provide the workbooks to the students?
You know, there's four schools, and the workbooks, most of the workbooks are only $35 a piece. And some of them, the seventh and eighth graders, they're $40 a piece because they're much bigger because it includes journaling, which I think is so important as I get older for the healing process to get rid of all that poison inside of them. We have between the four schools is about 1,000 students, a little over 1,000 students.
Well, we will have contact information for you and for Aseti Wakan on the podcast along with this interview, and I encourage everyone to consider sponsoring a book. I know a lot of people are unemployed at the moment, but please think about sponsoring one book for the students each if you can. And in fact, at the conference and in the issue of new observations, we will put that out as well to people.
Thank you for that. And Lakota culture, really keeping the Lakota culture is a gift to the whole world. Keeping every culture that we still have alive is a gift to the whole world. It's like keeping all the species of animals. It's even more so. The differences is a gift. It's God's gift to creation. So I encourage that.
Well, my personal belief is that I agree with Lakota teachings that man came from the Black Hills and spread out over the world. My sense, and you know, this is firsthand experience from being there, is that the Black Hills are the heart of America and the heart of the world. And in terms of continuing the legacy, the Lakota traditions and legacy and stories and culture, it's a critical part of reconnecting with who we are, who all of us are, as a human being.
It's true. The Lakota have always said the Black Hills was the heart of the universe. It's really interesting because in NASA, if they took pictures of the Black Hills, it looks like a human heart.
It looks like a human heart, yeah.
Yes, and when I first visited Lakota country, I really felt the heartbeat. It truly is the heart. It's all about relationships. Lakota has such an incredible heart to include their brothers and sisters from all over the lands of this world. My husband's family has housed, they don't know what a stranger is. It's a beautiful culture.
That's really true of everyone that I've met at Pine Ridge. The door is open. The mattresses are available. and the food is shared. It's an extraordinary way of approaching each day.
It really is. It's been such a blessing to be here and to be a part of Lakota, the Lakota world. I feel very blessed.
So can you just give us a brief update on what it's like on Pine Ridge under the quarantine, and will you be doing your Sundance this year?
Yes. I can't imagine that we won't continue the prayer. That prayer is so important. It's where power is and lies and emanates throughout the world. So, but what that will look like, I don't know. My father-in-law always said he never invited anyone to the Sundance. The spirits invite them. So we're doing our part. So, right now the tribe is not allowing anyone on the reservation that doesn't live here or has important business here. We have about 25 people right now with COVID-19 that we know of. That we just got tests a couple of weeks ago, really, to be able to do, you know, testing. I'm very proud of our tribal president and our council because when we got two people with COVID-19, they put us on lockdown where we couldn't leave our house for 72 hours so that they could identify the people that those people had contact with. So we have people at all of our locations of in and out of the reservation that are policing, so to speak, whether you belong here or not. So they're trying really hard. They don't want to be wiped out by COVID-19. We have a history of the chickenpox, what the chickenpox did to the Lakota and other tribes. So they're being very diligently. I need to talk my nephew, who grew up in our Sundance, is the cultural advisor for the tribe. So I need to talk to him what the status is for people that are either dancing or coming to Sundance. I know a lot of Sundances have said they're not having them, but that's not so with us. But what that's going to look like, I don't know yet. We're in a day that every day is important. We have to deal with the now.
It's so true. From day to day, the changes are at, it seems like at lightning speed. Each day is a new beginning. Yeah.
Absolutely. And our thoughts, and so that's kind of about where we're at. We're just being hit by COVID-19, our reservation and Rapid City. Our numbers are growing because, most people are in denial that it exists.
Right.
So, but hopefully we'll be able to keep that limited.
Well, I'm currently in Vermont, and Vermont population-wise is comparable to South Dakota. South Dakota, I think, has about 30,000 more people. And Vermont was named, the best managed state throughout this. And people just respected each other and stayed home and wore masks and washed their hands. The hand washing is such a critical part of it.
It really is.
Yeah. So it's really about, mutual respect.
It is. Go ahead.
Oh, no, you go ahead. Cindy.
It's also about a lot of our people are ill. They are in the disease of alcoholism and so much trauma that they denial everything. The denial is great about everything. So our tribe is trying to protect those people, to protect them so that they can heal. They have a chance to live. So
absolutely.
So we sometimes have to put in strict enforcement to protect those that can't help themselves right now.
Well, the Lakota people, something like the COVID virus could wipe out the entire tribe if allowed to spread unchecked. So this is absolutely the right approach for the tribe to take. And we have to respect the tribe and their decision. That's the way, absolutely, we have to proceed. But if we're concerned about each other and the health of our friends and neighbors and family, then we do what's necessary individually. Again, it's that spiritual hygiene that we've talked about throughout this conversation, that, is involved in everything that we do throughout our lives.
Absolutely. And I mean, it's a hardship not going to my nieces and nephews and grandchildren and not giving them a hug. It's a hardship. But
absolutely.
We have to be diligent and be responsible that we can't do that right now to help everybody to live,
Right. Well, we've come to the end of our chat. Is there anything specifically you'd like to say before we say goodbye for the time being?
No, I just think that I just want to encourage everyone to face whatever fears they're looking at, and to be a warrior, to find their heart, and be very conscious of our thoughts, because we're in very, very critical times. There are those, reach out to the angels. They're there to help you. We're in critical times, and we can't keep putting things off. We have to be serious about this transformation. And I just appreciate your time so much. Thank you for listening to me.
Oh, Cindy, thank you so much for joining us. And all the information on your work and Osetiwa Khan will be with this podcast on our website. And thank you so much for joining us here today. Many blessings.
And thank you for all the incredible work you're doing. Thank you so much.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I feel so blessed and honored to be included in the Pine Ridge world to the extent that I am. It's a great gift for me and my life. So thank you, Cindy.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.